You're listening to Stateside. I'm Zoe Clark, in for April Bear. So we all know that the Great Migration brought millions of Black Southerners north, right? To cities like Philadelphia, Chicago, and of course, Detroit. Seeking economic opportunity and an escape from the violence of the Jim Crow South. But long before that mass migration, there were African American families building lives all across what we now know as Michigan. In a few minutes, we're going to meet one of their descendants. But first, let's get a little grounding in how those Black pioneers came to settle here. Annalisa Cox is a historian based in West Michigan who works with the Hutchins Center for African and African American Research at Harvard University. She spoke earlier this year with April.
Can you just start us off with what kind of person was in a position to come north or to the area that we now know as Michigan?
And I'm glad you used that phrase, what we now know as Michigan, because at one point, odd as it may seem, this was a territory. And it was part of this massive piece of land that we won from the British government during the American Revolution. It actually includes what are now the states of Ohio, Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, and Wisconsin. And when I first started this research a number of years ago, the general assumption was that there were five, maybe six settlements that were home to free people of African descent in those five states before the Civil War. By the time my book went to press, I'd found over 330 settlements. In fact, by about 1853 in the state of Michigan, all but nine counties had African American residents. That includes the UP. So at one point, Michigan was much more racially diverse than it is today. Not necessarily equal, but much more racially diverse. And the kind of people that were here, even before there was a United States, it really depends on when you're looking at this region. So along the Grand River or near Fort Detroit in the 1700s, you had Afro-French who were traveling this area, doing business in this area. By the time the American Revolutionary War was won, they had been living in this region for three generations, marrying indigenous people, working with them, working with the French, and traveling all over this region. I've just been astounded by how far they could travel in one year. And then, of course, there were people who considered themselves Americans. And the people who came to this area may have been free from New England or the Deep South. Not a few of them were descended from Black patriots who had fought in the American Revolution.
In modern migrations, it's not uncommon for people from one part of the continent or the country to move near other people who share their roots. Would that have been true of African Americans coming to the territory? Were they settling around people who they might have known from back home?
Yes, but it's sort of who those keystone pioneers were. Just as there were young white families or European-descended families who just flung themselves out to the edges of the frontier, there were African-descended families, many of them multiracial, who came out here before there were others. There always has to be a really early one, although I'm very, very cautious about saying first. There's one thing I have learned in this research is that if somebody tells me this is the first Black pioneer, I know that there's usually somebody earlier. The problem with that language of first is that oftentimes historians won't look further back.
The stories of Black pioneers are family stories. And also joining us today is Angelica Roberts. She's an artist living in Kalamazoo County and a longtime seeker of her own personal history. Angelica Roberts, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Tell me about your anecdotal sense of your family. What kind of stories did you hear when you were a young person?
Well, among the first stories I heard were about people who had settled in the Kalamazoo County area. So I first heard about Enoch and Deborah Harris from my grandfather because he would remind his young grandchildren about their history. He was very proud of it. He would say, "My great-grandparents were the first settlers on the Genesee Prairie." And he would talk about Enoch Harris. Now, the Genesee Prairie is no longer referred to as the Genesee Prairie. It's an area in Ashtamo Township of Kalamazoo County.
Mm-hmm.
But that knowledge was passed along. His son, my uncle, Dwayne Roberts, who became a civil rights activist in Kalamazoo, had foresight and also looked back at history. And he worked to preserve history in the family and worked to preserve the Harris history. So there is an historical, a Michigan historical marker now at the Genesee Prairie Cemetery on land that was actually once owned by Enoch and Deborah Harris in Kalamazoo.
How did you start your own investigations?
Well, I was certainly captivated as a child. I loved hearing the stories. And over the years, in different ways, either I would go looking for stories or sometimes I felt like they came looking for me.
How so?
I've been fortunate in that I have found people who helped me along the way. My aunt, my father's sister, Barbara Roberts, I think of her as a story tender. She carried a lot. She had a wonderful memory. Then we would get talking about the past. So, for example, we had one scrap of information, and it was a piece about a family member on my grandmother's side, my father's mother's side, the Lennox family. And it was that there was a Nathan Lennox. This would have been my great-great-grandfather, who helped row freedom seekers across the Detroit River to freedom in Canada. Now, that was just a little piece, and we knew that the Lennox family had come from Massachusetts, the Boston area. We didn't know a lot more, and that's one of the stories that I've been learning about recently, and it's really given me a lot of joy to discover some of their accomplishments. So Nathan's father was Cornelius. Cornelius had come from Massachusetts. In Massachusetts, the Lennox family was extremely active and working for full citizenship for all people. They were in well-known anti-slavery circles.
I believe there's some military history for the family too, right?
There is. Cornelius's father, Cornelius, in Massachusetts, who had fought at the Battle of Bunker Hill. And then Nathan had a sister who became involved in a well-known event where freedom seekers were trying to flee to Canada and were temporarily in a jail. This is the Blackburns in 1833. And Caroline visited, changed clothes with Ruthie Blackburn. And it was a, you know, a dangerous escapade. But I've been hearing stories like that since I've been learning that Caroline and her husband, George, donated land to the Second Baptist Church there in Detroit. And that became a haven for freedom seekers.
Angelica, what kind of sense have you been able to get for what some of your ancestors' lives were like here in the early days, maybe even before statehood? I mean, I don't know if there would even be any physical artifacts that you could look to, but have any of these stories shed any light on sort of how they lived?
Well, it's really a matter of piecing things together and using imagination. Hearing stories from, you know, my own family, but then also finding history and then imagining from historical pieces what that tells about my family. You know, in my own family, there are stories of my grandfather talking about himself, you know, walking behind a plow. And so we can get a feel for, you know, what he knows of rural life, of farming life. So he had many farming stories. And these people were primarily working with agriculture, working to farm the land.
Right.
And I think that's an aspect of this history that is surprising to many people, is that the myth or the trope of the Midwest is that African-descended people are urban and mainly 20th century.
Harkening back to the Great Migration again.
Right. Yeah. But in reality, these African-descended pioneers were coming out before the 1860s, before the Civil War. This is at a time when the majority of people are not urban, and they are not urban. They are interested in owning good land and farming it well. The majority of African Americans in the Midwest before the Civil War were actually rural, and they were astoundingly successful farmers. One of Angelica's stories that I love is that Enoch and Deborah Harris came out of Ohio before Michigan was a state, and they had been friends with John Chapman, who a lot of school children know as Johnny Appleseed.
Wow.
And planted one of the first apple orchards in Lower Michigan. They are some of our founders in a state that is known for its apple production, and yet they are bringing in to the state of Michigan an understanding of apple cultivation on the hundreds of acres that they owned. To be clear here, they're coming at a time when there are very few immigrants or pioneers in this region of Michigan. It's mainly indigenous people. And so successful and wealthy African-descended pioneers are going to be hugely visible in this space.
Mm-hmm. Annalisa Cox, did you get any sense in your research of what kind of reception the Black pioneers got when they came to the Northwest Territory? I mean, there were some territories and states that had specific laws that were pretty hostile to the entry of Black Americans.
Yes, although the earliest of these pioneers, for example, Angelica Roberts talked about members of the Lennox family, they were here by 1809. They're coming to this region in hope because the Northwest Territorial Ordinance of 1787 promised that the region would be free of slavery and have equal voting rights for all men, regardless of the color of their skin. So this is a period that's truly revolutionary. We think of equal voting rights as not happening until the 1960s, but this is the 1780s, the 1790s, where propertied African-American men in the Midwest are going to the polls and voting. So they're coming in hope, and then there's a backlash. By 1819, whites in the territory of Michigan create a territorial ordinance which adds the word white into who can vote, thus stealing the right to vote from African-American pioneers who were pivotal in founding this territory in this region.
Angelica Roberts?
Yes.
I understand that a lot of what you've had to work with has been in the form of stories and narrative, but did you find any legal records that give you hints to what Enoch and Deborah's lives were like and that of their extended family?
I have found clues, I guess, from all different directions. The story about them living in Ohio to John Chapman was something that came from another descendant that I discovered, Carl Lightfoot, and he had done research about the early days. So just in terms of dates and places and records, Enoch and Deborah's daughter, Louisa, was in Ashtabula Township, was the first marriage in that area. So there are things that can be discovered through records, either my own search or the searches of others. And then there's just, you know, intuition and imagination and the sense of what lives may have been like if you reflect going to the place, you know, knowing where your ancestors came from and just standing on the land and looking at the horizon that they saw. Much of their land where they had their homestead is still being farmed today. Certainly records have helped, as well as writings by others. A lot of research has been done about the Roberts family and the migration of the Roberts family from North Carolina up through Indiana. There are a number of settlements of these free people of color, and a number of communities were established there. And then Roberts' family also came up to Michigan. The Roberts family kept a lot of papers, which are now in the Library of Congress.
I was just going to ask if those would be personal letters. I mean, talk about a great historical record.
Yes, very helpful. Well, for example, there's one letter which appears in history books when my great-great-great-grandfather Willis Roberts traveled from North Carolina to Indiana and settled near Quakers with other community. He thought about going back to North Carolina, and he had a cousin who wrote him a letter, said, and this was 1830s, it was right after the Nat Turner Rebellion, and there were a number of laws that were being changed in North Carolina, taking away rights of free people of color. And this cousin, who was called Long Jim, that was his nickname, James Roberts, the cousin said, "Why would you go back to a land where your children aren't safe?" So that's one of the letters and those records. And I've since gone to reunions in Indiana and have met a descendant of Long Jim Roberts, which was very exciting.
That's so interesting that even in the times, which were pretty unsettled, that the perception was that it was definitely a safer environment than what they had left behind.
The fact that there wasn't slavery here, and I should be clear here, when the Territorial Ordinance of 1787 was written, there was absolutely slavery in Detroit and a lot of other places in the Northwest Territory. But the fact that it was actually illegal made a huge difference to the fact that people could raise their children away from that environment of brutal enslavement that was occurring and growing in the South.
Institutional brutality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there were also ways in which people were organizing against slavery for equality, for broader liberties in this region. And these free people of African descent were absolutely doing that. In fact, they created what were then called colored conventions. These are gatherings of hundreds of people. They would send out broadsides. And I think the idea of literate, legally savvy, highly organized free African Americans in Michigan long before the Civil War is one that might be surprising to people, but they were doing so much to advance the causes of liberty and equality. There's a beautiful excerpt from one of those written broadsides that was sent out across the state of Michigan in 1843 to gather African Americans together in Detroit for the first convention. And I was wondering if Angelica Roberts could read it briefly. It's very brief, but it's so beautiful. Written.
Angelica, do you mind?
That would be fine. And I would just introduce this by saying that I believe that members of my family would have been active within this movement.
Mm-hmm.
The time has come for us to speak out in our own defense upon the great cause of human liberty and equal rights. Yes, yes, let us assemble, let us come together and pledge ourselves in the name of God and bleeding humanity and posterity to organize. Organize and organize until the green-eyed monster tyranny shall be trampled under the feet of the oppressed, and liberty and equality shall embrace each other and shall have scattered their blessings along the length and breadth of our land.
Angelica Roberts, what kind of sense have you come to about how your family on both sides found their place, you know, through the years of early statehood and beyond, and, you know, maybe just why they stuck it out.
In my family, there's been a lot of support. My grandfather felt that, you know, in the early days of the rural communities that people helped one another. So that wasn't always the case for every family, but there's been both. There has been that reaching out and the pushing away, and it's still going on, isn't it?
Right.
That's why it's so important to have these kinds of conversations to examine how we treat one another.
Angelica Roberts is a resident of Kalamazoo County. We've also been talking with Annalisa Cox, the author of The Bone and Sinew of the Land, America's Forgotten Pioneers, and The Struggle for Equality. Thank you both so much for all the work you've done, but also for your time today.
Thank you. Thank you, April. It's been a pleasure.
Yes.